welcome to Simple Actions. We're glad you're all here tonight. And if you would, my name's Judy and I am an alcoholic.
Hey, Judy.
If you would like to help me open the meeting with serenity prayer, we'll have a moment of silence and then we'll do that together. God,
grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Amen. Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking, so our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of steps. At this time, please silence all cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving about the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the disease of alcoholism on the basis of these simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It's the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA simple actions. I'll now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We're self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening we're discussing step four, part one. I'll read the first paragraph.
Step three.
Are you sure? Okay.
We're sure.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, good.
All right, well.
Right?
Charles, hold on to your hat.
I'm not nervous at all.
Is Chris here? Did she have it? Okay. Step three. That's a whole different horse of a whole different color. Thank you. Rewind that. This evening we're discussing step three. I'll read the first paragraph on page 60, and then the panel will share for a few minutes on each reading. Our panel tonight is Charla, to my far right, who I told was going to be talking on the fourth step tonight, so now I'm completely flummoxed her. But anyway, she's here, and she's from the Cornerstone group of Alcoholics Anonymous that meets in this church on Saturday nights. And Catherine from our home group here. So I'll go ahead and read on page 60. And the step three is made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Page 60. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. And C, that God could and would if he were sought.
Catherine, you want to start? Hi, my name is Catherine and I am an alcoholic.
Hey,
and I'm really glad to be here tonight. I guess with this A, B, and C, it's kind of like, to me, one of the most important things in the program, as far as it's true for me no matter where I'm at in my sobriety. Because for me, when I came here, I really thought that my problem was drinking, and then I realized I was a pretty decent gal. I was pretty nice, you know, I was good to people. I just drank a little too much. And this is telling me that that I'm alcoholic and I can't manage my own life. It doesn't say whether I'm drinking or not. And that no human power could relieve my alcoholism. So even if I stop drinking and get sober and my life starts getting pretty good again, that I can't do that on my own, and I can't maintain that on my own. Like, I don't have the power. And that is telling me that God could, if I seek Him. And so for me, I have to continually seek Him. And I don't claim to have any, like, pathway straight to God. It's like something that, for me, is a... Even at the times when I feel like I don't know anything about what God is or who God is, as long as I'm trying to spend time with Him, whether it's by going to an AA meeting or talking with another person from the program or helping a newcomer, that's some form of seeking. And so that's, for me, like the bare bones, basic stuff that I have to do every day in order to hopefully stay sober. No matter where I'm at, no matter if I'm feeling great and my life's going well, or if, you know, I just lost my job and I don't know how I'm going to pay the rent, and it seems like my whole world's falling down around me. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Charla. I'm an alcoholic.
Charla.
Yeah, these are to me the three main ideas of this program. I didn't know it coming in. I really thought that Alcoholics Anonymous was going to be stopping drinking and never being able to drink again and having to live with that, and that it was mainly a support group. And we were going to sit around and complain about how we couldn't drink. And maybe we would pretend to have fun. We'd go bowling or miniature golfing or whatever. But life was really never going to be fun again. Because I couldn't have fun without drinking. Which is ironic, because I wasn't having any fun at the end at all. But and what this says to me is, I need God. I mean, that's basically what that says. I can't do it. God can. But I didn't have a real good relationship with God when I came in. I'm not sure that I ever did, but I felt like I had tried to pray in the past and He ignored me. And there were some pretty big prayers that weren't answered. And if you had to go through what I went through, you know, I had so many problems and He wasn't listening. And maybe even that idea of, there are really good people out there that live right and go to church and all that, and He listens to them, but He's not listening to me. But, you know, I came in and you guys told me, you know, I looked at you and you were happy, and I wasn't expecting that. I mean, I was expecting maybe fake smiles, but I wasn't expecting genuine joy that I saw when I came into these rooms. So I was willing to do what this book said to do and what you guys told me to do. And that just really, for me, started with the simple prayers. And from there, it just, you know, along with going to the meetings and talking to my sponsor, miracles started to happen.
Thank you. Okay, now we are going to continue. We're continuing on page 60. Being convinced we were at step three, which is that we decided to turn our will and our life over to God as we understood Him. Just what do we mean by that, and just what do we do? The first requirement is that we be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. On that basis, we are almost always in collision with something or somebody, even though our motives are good. Most people try to live by self-propulsion, Each person is like an actor who wants to run the whole show, is forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, the rest of the players in his own way. If his arrangements would only stay put, if only people would do as he wished, the show would be great. Everybody, including himself, would be pleased. Life would be wonderful. In trying to make these arrangements, our actor may sometimes be quite virtuous. He may be kind, considerate, patient, generous, even modest and self-sacrificing. On the other hand, he may be mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest. But as with most humans, he's more likely to have varied traits.
I laugh at this because, you know, I don't think I could ever get to a place where I truly understood everything that the Big Book was telling me, because it changes over time. And I just remember, and I guess, I mean, I might not even have been in the program 3 months, and I was on step three, and I would go around to meetings, and, you know, it's discussion meeting, and I'm bringing up the topic, what does it mean to turn your will over, like, in your life, like, how do you do this? I mean, it's just so perplexing. And, you know, I don't know why nobody told me at the time, but somewhere down the line, someone said, well, your will is your thoughts and your life is your behavior. And not that that really clarified it all that much for me, but this next paragraph about the first requirement is that we be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. And that I can understand and go, okay, yeah. I mean, when I got here, I ran my life into the ground. If I thought there was any way that I could piece things back together on my own, I would have tried to do that. But it was at that point where it had made such a mess of everything. My story involves a lot of legal troubles. I almost killed 2 people, and I had lost my job, and all of that happened within a 24-hour period. And I guess where it got really, basically almost a year into my sobriety, I had a sponsor who told me to read this every morning. And even then, I could start to see where this made sense, but I didn't know, I couldn't understand why, well, if I'm being nice to someone, how is that me trying to control the show? Because I'm just trying to be nice, right? But it's like over time, I could start to see my manipulative behavior. And even now, I catch myself almost on a daily basis saying, either to myself or to someone else, if they would just follow the rules, or if they would just, you know, we all have to do the same thing. Well, you know, why doesn't this person drive the right speed limit? Or, I mean, it doesn't matter what situation I'm in, at least once a day, but we're going to be honest here, it's more than that. I say these things. It's hardwired into who I am, that I think that life would be great if everybody else would just play fairly and play with the rules that I think are the right rules. And so, my understanding of step three, to be honest with you, when I first saw it, I thought, wow, this is going to be great. All the things I worry about in life, like who am I going to be when I grow up? What's my life going to be like? I'll just turn all that over to God and I won't worry about it anymore. But that's not exactly what it's... I can't do that on a mental level in my daily activities. I mean, it starts in the morning when I'm putting my trash can out. My neighbor puts their trash can too far over. It's on my driveway. And if they do that, then I'm going to have to put it too far over. And then I'm going to hit the cans when I back out. And, I mean, it starts that early in the morning. We had a speaker a couple weeks ago, and I wrote this down because it really meant a lot to me. When she said that, you know, it says, living on that basis, the basis like my normal way of thinking, is going to cause me to be in collision with people around me constantly, which is true. It is true. Even though I think I'm right, so I can't see it. And that any time that I'm in collision with something or somebody, that's self-will. And logically that makes sense, but it still doesn't immediately, just because it makes sense, means that all of a sudden I just don't think those thoughts anymore. And so this for me is a practice, like every day. And I don't know, I'll pass to Charlotte.
Thank you.
Thanks, Catherine. I hear you. When I got here and I heard let go and let God and give it to God, it just was like, how do I do that? I think, you know, those big problems that a lot of us have when we come in, I didn't have necessarily legal problems, but I had a lot of family issues, a lot of financial issues. All you can really do, and I think I heard this at the same speaker meeting, but that you're talking about, was just, are you willing to just set that aside and just concentrate on this? Because this is what's important. This is what's going to save your life. And then that, you know, hopefully will take care of itself. And it did. It really did. I mean, I had to do, once I had been in a couple months and I had to get honest with my husband about our financial situation, he took over that and he's doing just great, way better than I ever did. But yeah, and I totally relate. I was in a couple of months and I was on my way home from work, and a lot of times I'll work all day Saturday and he's off with the kids. And I'm in the car on the way home, and I'm like, which I do every time I'm on my way home from work. I know what's going to happen when I get home. The kids are going to be in their pajamas. You know, it's 6:30 at night. Dinner's not going to be ready. The house is going to be a wreck. He's not going to have done one dish. You know, the dog hair is going to be everywhere. And I was just obsessed and obsessed and obsessed. And then when I got home, I'm like, I'm going to drink. You know, I got to drink immediately. But this time I stopped myself in the car and I thought, there's nothing I can do about that. I mean, I can try what I did in the past, which was get home and no, really nothing's wrong, and stomp around and try and, you know, because he should know. He should know to have done that. And he should absolutely know what I'm mad about. He got mad, which he rightfully should have. And, you know, it was just as you can imagine. So I started recognizing those patterns pretty quickly, and I will get to this in a minute. I have had a couple experiences the past couple of days that lets me know God's working, and he's making me recognize these situations that I was just self-will gone crazy, and just manipulating the tiniest of situations and thinking I was doing a good thing when I was really, really just trying to make myself look better. And that's not what God wants for me. He just wants me to help take care of his children. And anyway, so I'm really grateful that I'm starting to see that. But again, I do it too. I mean, in the morning, my husband complains I make the coffee too strong. And so as I'm making the coffee, well, you know, he could get up and make the coffee, you know, and it's just, you just have to get, you know, just recognize it and pray about it. And somehow that helps. That's all I got.
Thank you. We're on page 61 now. What usually happens? The show doesn't come off very well. He begins to think life doesn't treat him right. He decides to exert himself more. He becomes on the next occasion still more demanding or gracious, as the case may be. Still, the play does not suit him. Admitting he may be somewhat at fault, he is sure that other people are more to blame. He becomes angry, indignant, self-pitying. What is his basic trouble? Is he not really a self-seeker, even when trying to be kind? Is he not a victim of the delusion that he can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if he only manages well? Is it not evident to all the rest of the players that these are the things he wants? And do not his actions make each of them wish to retaliate, snatching all they can get out of the show? Is he not, even in his best moments, a producer of confusion rather than harmony?
Wow. This is pretty heavy stuff, but it's so true, and it rings true for me, because particularly when I look back at my drinking, one of the things, the lies, whatever, the the thing that I used to quote unquote justify my drinking, that it was okay, that I didn't have a problem, was because I worked and paid my bills. You know, I used that to allow me to drink the way I wanted to. But after I got sober, I mean, really quickly afterwards, I had to I had to get my resume together and look for a job. And I realized I'd been out of college for 10 years. And in those 10 years, I'd had like 10 different jobs. So it was kind of like one of those things where this lie that I've been telling myself all this time was not even true. And I could get the job, but I couldn't keep it. And I was paying bills, but I was blowing through a lot of money that had been given to me where I had none of it left. And I guess where I'm going with this is that somehow in my mind, and it still works this way, even without the alcohol, but somehow my mind, it's like I could just get my life tweaked perfect over here and over here, then I can, and I can live how I want to live. I can drink how I want to drink. Everything will be fine. I can justify my behavior. Nobody can tell me that I'm not living well. When the truth is, I'm so spun up inside because I can never get it right. I can never get it perfect. And it creates this chaos inside of me that's, you know, on one hand, I'm struggling to try to manage my life, that I am trying to manage everyone else so that I can feel okay with who I am and feel okay just being myself, and I can never get there. I can't ever get there. And it's kind of like that final defeat when I stopped fighting drinking, when I stopped fighting the fact that I would never be able to drink safely. I would never be able to control and enjoy my drinking. That those two just would never happen for me. And I have this old ideas in the back of my mind still that like to creep up now that I have about how my life should look. And these behaviors and this thinking about my life comes in, and next thing I'm fighting to get to the top of the heap, to make my life okay here and make my life okay here so that it looks good on the surface. And then, you know, a sponsor can't say, you know, you're not doing this and you're not, you know, just so everybody thinks everything's okay. But whenever I'm doing that, I'm crazy inside. And I'm the victim of my delusion that I can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of the world if I manage well. And the truth is, and I do have a lot of examples of the times where I've just followed direction against what I think is the right course of action, and something happens that is not what I thought would happen. And even though it doesn't seem that great at the time, it turns out to be a really awesome thing. And like just one example, I was looking, I was unemployed because I had been fired for drinking. And I had these felony charges pending. And I was really scared about getting a job, and nobody wanted to talk to me because I had this horrible, like, I didn't stay in any job. So why would someone want to hire me if I'm not going to stay there? And my sponsor just kind of said, just keep applying for jobs. And I'm like, but, just do it. Any job you think you can even remotely qualify for, just do it. So I grumbled and, you know, kept applying for jobs. Went in for an interview one day for a part-time job and walked out of there with a full-time job with benefits. I mean, just like out of the blue, just like that. Just a random day that I didn't even think that this job, why am I even gonna go interview for a part-time job? I mean, why? So it's just, there's so many examples of when I stop trying to tweak my life and just do what is asked of me, that all the things I'm trying to tweak work themselves out. And maybe not how I think they would. But it's something, just like, you know, starting out my day with, you need to put your trash cans where you're supposed to, buddy. you know, it's like, I forget. I constantly forget. I cannot hold this with any, just like I have trouble during my drinking time, the next day when I go to pick up that drink, I can't remember how I almost lost my job that morning because I showed up late smelling like alcohol. I can't remember that, even though it was like 8 hours ago, maybe six, I don't know.
Excuse me. Yeah, this happens Sunday, and this is, you know, I have 10 months on Sunday of sobriety, which isn't much, but you would think, you know, and I decided that morning I was going to do tacos for dinner, and we didn't have like a full thing of tortillas, just bear with me, so so I noticed at lunch my husband, who was working on my car all day, came in and had a, like made himself a wrap with a tortilla, and I didn't really think much. I kind of thought, but I didn't think much. He didn't know I was gonna do tacos for dinner. I didn't tell him that. So I go to make the tacos that night, and I'm thinking, I have three kids there. They'll each get two tacos, and there's five tortillas left. And I'm like, and I actually thought, I actually caught myself thinking this process, I'm going to go and ask him, did you eat one of these tortillas? Even though I saw him do it. And, you know, what could I tell you what I hope, that's old thinking, and what I hoped I would get out of that would be that he would say, yeah, I didn't realize you were going to have tacos. I want to, I don't know what I thought. But the point is, I think there's a point here, that I was trying to manipulate that situation so that he would see that he was wrong, that he shouldn't have done that, and change his behavior. And I caught myself, and you know what? I worked it out. Everybody got enough to eat. And then I thought, I kind of started bargaining with myself. Well, maybe I won't do that, but maybe I'll just say, I didn't know you were going to have a tortilla. I was planning on doing tacos for that. And that wouldn't be too bad. And then, you know, God came in and just said, shut up. Don't say anything. Just deal with it, you know? And that's just doing the next right thing. And how many times did I do that in the past? You know, when I was in active drinking or whatever. How many of those little situations, and at work today, somebody left, I sell shoes, somebody left shoes out after they waited on someone. And normally in the past, I would have gone back there with the shoes in front of the boss and everything and said, did you lay these out on the floor? And they would be like, yeah. And I'd be like, oh, no, I'll get it for you. Don't worry about it. You know? And I mean, why would I even do that? To make them look bad, to make me look good? And, you know, Charlotte won, them zero. I don't know. But I didn't do that. I got the shoes up and I put them back, you know? And the sad thing is they'll never know what a good thing I did for them. But that thinking is changing in me. And that, I mean, that was a spiritual awakening I had with the tortillas, believe it or not. I mean, it's really changing. And that is an amazing thing. Like, just do the next right thing. Think of others. Don't hurt people. And that's pretty cool. That's my tortilla story.
Thank you. Okay. We are on Appendix 2 in the back of the book. And I'm going to read just a little bit of that. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable.
Mm. Wow, what a transition. You know, I want to share with you that when... on my last drunk, well, I mean, I drank for 4 days after that, but my last, like, serious bender, I had this really horrific accident on 264. Right, if you're coming from the beach to Norfolk at the 64 interchange, in rush hour traffic on a Friday, in the rain, and I slammed into the back of a truck, and I was driving like a little Civic. So if you can imagine, the car was very mangled. And I left the scene. And, you know, I was so out of it. I was cognizant, but not really cognizant of how bad it really was. And even the next morning when two state troopers were, you know, banging on the door. It was just sound effect. That was for effect, sir. And I opened the door, and I saw my car. I was just like, holy mackerel. And anyways, the point where I'm going at is that when all this was going down, and I was just so disgusted with myself, just disgusted with myself as a person, as just a human being that shouldn't even exist on this planet because I'm just such an awful wretch, I couldn't help but be aware that there was no human explanation for why I walked away, or in this case, drove away barely from that situation. And something inside of me kind of twinged just a little bit, knowing that there was something that pulled me out of that. It was just a slight awareness. The reason I mention it was because it was the first time in I don't know how long, maybe my whole life, that I even acknowledged that there was a power greater than me that was at force in my life. I had an intellectual knowledge of God, but no ever experience or practice of awareness of being involved and having to do with the outcome of my life. And even after having that experience and being aware of that, it wasn't like, oh wow, God's in charge of everything. And even now I still don't have that awareness. I really don't. And I guess the reason I bring that up is because I had that experience, and then I don't know, 5 days later, I ended up in an AA meeting. And at the end of the AA meeting, you know what they do? They freaking hold hands and start praying. And I am like, I gotta get out of here, man. This is freaking me out. Like, I really thought that this was like a cult that people had warned me about when I was a kid. Like, you know, with like the spiked Kool-Aid. And like so that is like that immediate, I guess, that dichotomy of like that like split second of open-mindedness, but then just bam, like closed-mindedness, and how that could happen in such a short amount of time. And so for me, that part of any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience, that was huge. That was freaking huge. Because I would like to pretend like none of that stuff ever happened. That wasn't me. I didn't do it. I was drunk. I didn't know what I was doing. That's what I would have liked to do. But for whatever reason, I don't even know why, for some reason, I was able to be honest and say that was me. I did that stuff. I don't like it. It's painful to talk about it. I wished that I didn't make it out of the accident. But I did, and I didn't know why. And I knew that there was some crazy reason why I was being given a second chance. I don't know. And so that, I guess, allowed me to just say, you know, I don't know what this AA stuff is all about. And I don't know if they're cold or not. They seem pretty nice, but aren't most cold people seeming pretty nice? But you know what? Hearing them talk honestly about their drinking, that's helped me open my mind up a whole lot. You know, I still have an attitude of intolerance at times and denial at times. You know, I like to think that because I'm doing such a great job, things are good are happening to me. But the truth is, it's not. That's not the truth at all. And you know, it's even touching to me right now just to think about how much freaking love. I mean, someone like me who's so malfunctioned spiritually could even be given a glimpse of a different kind of life. It's just so beautiful that it's okay, no matter where you're at, to be able to set, like Charlotte's mentioned, set all that junk aside and just try. Thanks.
When I got here, I believed in God's will, but I believed that whatever God wanted to happen was going to happen, and whatever was going to happen in the world was going to happen, and I had no say in it. And I certainly did not feel like he wanted the best for me, because he hadn't given me that up to that point. And so what Catherine said, I came into these rooms and I heard honesty. And not only were you honest about your drinking and about things you had done, but you were honest about this God that you had in your life, or this higher power. And that gave me hope. So when my sponsor said pray, I prayed. And it was very simple prayers at first. We're going to get to it in a minute, but that third step prayer is beautiful. I started saying that early on. And I found myself in moments that would have sent me into a rage, and I was completely at peace. Now, that doesn't happen all the time, but it happens a lot more. And I'm able to be of service in a way, not just in these rooms, but with my family, with friends, with strangers, that I never thought that I would be that way. I thought maybe I was that way, I guess, but I wasn't. I've shared this before. At 2 months sober, I was able to go to my parents in Texas. Had a lot going on there. My mom just had her knee replaced. My sister was going through chemo. And I was able to just be of service. And I found myself thinking, and this is due to you guys, I want to leave this place better than I found it. I want to leave them better than I found them. And it was the best vacation, and I wouldn't have thought it was going to be a vacation I've ever had. And I've had vacations where I sat on the beach drinking beer all day, and it beats that any day. And, you know, I left there, and my mom said, I mean, they just were like, my dad cried. He was just, yeah, you really helped us out here. And my mom said that every time I talked to her, I don't know what you're doing, but you keep doing it. Keep doing it. And she doesn't ask me if I'm drinking anymore. And she doesn't, you know, she's developing trust in me again. And that is you guys and God. And to find myself, I mean, I was one of those where I think we all were, but you would drink like me too. And my mom used to tell me that. A lot of people used to tell me that. If I had to deal with what you have to deal with, I'd probably drink too. But they didn't know the extent of it. And that I can be okay with a moment that before would just have, you know, just, I mean, I was mad all the time, but that was my first spiritual awakening, that first time that I had one of those moments, and I thought, I'm okay with this, because he wants what's best for me. I believed it, because I believed you guys when you told me that.
Okay, we're on page 17 now. And this is the last paragraph for this step. We are average Americans. All sections of this country and many of its occupations are represented, as well as many political, economic, social, and religious backgrounds. We are people who would normally not mix, but there exists among us a fellowship, a friendliness, and an understanding which is indescribably wonderful. We are like the passengers of a great liner, the moment after rescue from shipwreck, when camaraderie, joyousness, and democracy pervade the vessel from steerage to captain's table. Unlike the feelings of the ship's passengers, however, our joy in escape from disaster does not subside as we go our individual ways. The feeling of having shared in a common peril is one element in the powerful cement which binds us. But that in itself would never have held us together as we are now joined. The tremendous fact
for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism.
For me, if the women who, and it wasn't just the women, because I went to a lot of meetings when I first came in. I drank for 16 years every day. The longest time I didn't drink was 2 weeks that I spent in jail. And I walked straight from jail to a bar in the middle of the day and ordered a Jim Beam on the rocks, just because. And sometimes it's overwhelming to think of how much time other people have devoted to my recovery. They saved my life. And you know, I have that experience sitting around in meetings in the beginning because I couldn't, it was hard to stay alone at home during the day. So I was used to working and being with my thoughts. It's sitting in a meeting in the middle of the day with a bunch of retired people who were there to listen to me. I mean, and I'm just looking around at these people thinking, why in the world would they waste their time on me? And they did. And they would come and talk to me after the meeting. I'd be crying, telling me it's going to be okay, just keep coming back. And, you know, I wouldn't want anyone to miss that for the world. Because it truly is, like, the first time I ever saw what true camaraderie is. Like, I don't care who you are, but I've been through what you've been through. And I'm going to help take you to the other side if you're willing. I will help you walk to the other side. And there's this room is full of people like that, that would lay down their life just to help me walk through. And, you know, I couldn't ever imagine life without alcohol. Like, I couldn't imagine that. Like, you know, having fun, having a life. Like, I thought it was going to be horrible. And now I can't imagine living life the way I did. And I've been sober a little over 4 years, and I drank for 16 years. So from the time I was 16 to the time I was almost 32. So I feel almost sometimes like I'm a little kid, like a baby. You know, I'm like learning how to be an adult again. You know, be a member of society. And sometimes, you know, it's funny. I mean, little things that I've learned in AA, like clean up the meeting room when you're done and put the chairs back and wash out the car. Now it's like I can go to other places and have meetings and I know how to behave. And I guess the reason I say stuff like that is it's like they taught me how to live. And I couldn't imagine living. I had reached that point where I couldn't imagine life with alcohol, and I couldn't imagine life without alcohol. And now it's like I can be out in the world, which for me as an alcoholic is a really hard, you know. And I can come to an AA meeting and I hear those ABCs and it brings me right back to the center. I'm an alcoholic. I cannot manage my own life. No human power can. And God will. He will, but I have to seek Him. And I come in this room of like, I mean, no offense to anyone, but a bunch of eyeballs and, you know, a couple people missing body parts. I'm just joking. I was thinking, like,
true story.
I
of the time my cat was in heat and all these like weird tomcats came around and they're all like missing a tail and like near. You know? But I'm just saying, I mean, all these like, I mean, and believe me, I do not look the same as when I got here. I was pretty rough. Like, bathing daily, that was a learned practice. I mean, these are the things I had to like learn. When I got to AA, you know, and I mean, I had like no color in my skin because I like didn't go out in the sun. I mean, it was just awful. But I guess where I'm going with that is that that experience, it's scary. It's scary to like kind of let go of your life. I mean, initially, it's kind of a relief. But at least it was for me. It was a relief to let go and say, you know what? This woman I'm going to ask to be my sponsor, I trust her. These people in the meeting, I trust them. And I don't know why they're telling me stuff. I don't even understand half of it. But I'm going to try. It changed my life. And as I get further away from that last drink and those debacles, obviously I still have debacles. They're just not to the magnitude by any means, the proportion that they were. But the point I'm trying to make is that it's like learning what it means to care about another human being, like really care and not want anything back from it. Like, I didn't really understand that concept when I got here. I just didn't understand, like, why would you help someone if you're not going to get anything out of it? You're not going to get a gold star, a raise, money, I mean, something. And people did that for me. And sometimes in the beginning, when I would pray at night, I would just get, like, start crying because I didn't think I deserved it. And so that's why, like, any newcomers, people want to help so much, because the only way you can repay that is to help someone else. The only way you can repay that. And plus, behave nicely. Not act like a jerk all the time. Sometimes. Anyways, thank you.
I love this. We are people who normally would not mix. I love that. And it's true, but we have so much fun. We just have the best time. One of the meetings I go to, there's an older gentleman who talks about his corn liquor. And I get it. I never had corn liquor, but we're there on the same page. And you know, and it talk. This book is just so beautifully written, because when I read this the first time, and it talks about the passengers of blah, 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 that's it. That's it. We're all in this together. And you know, when I see a newcomer come in now, I see me, and I just want to do what you guys did. You don't have to drink again. Just try this. Just, you know, call me whenever you want and just give us a shot, because we have a lot of fun. I think that's all I have.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, ladies. Really great.
We have no dues or fees. We do have a service structure we make contributions to, and we support this meeting. And we are passing the basket for that right now. Seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. Are there any AA announcements tonight?
an alcoholic. My name is David.
Hey, David.
For home group members, business meeting is next Monday, and for everyone else, the church is closed next Monday, but we'll be able to meet at the Celebration Center, which I think is on the corner of Colonial and Raleigh. It's part of the church property, but it's in a house on the corner, not the house where we started, different one at the other end. It's called the Celebration Center. We'll be able to meet there next week. Thanks.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm Shelley, alcoholic.
Hey, Shelley.
My home group just held Wednesdays, 8 p.m. West Kent is celebrating their 34th anniversary. Eating meeting on June 25th at the eating portion starts at 6:30. Speaker is Linda T. from Hampton, and everybody's welcome. And if you would, bring a salad or dessert. Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay. We got one more.
Yeah,
two more.
Yes, sir.
Hey, all. My name's Javier. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Javier.
VISCPOD, Virginia State Conference of Young People and Alcoholics Anonymous, is going to have its conference at the Virginia Beach Ocean Front Wyndham Hotel and Resort, May 30th through June 1st. That is the 2 weekends. Pre-registration is $25. Come see me after the meeting if you want any details. Thank you.
Hi,
Leslie.
Hi, Leslie.
2016, the 52nd Annual International Women's Conference is coming to Norfolk. There are many positions available.
Donna.
Donna, the alcoholic.
Hey, Donna.
Myself, Root Beer Bob, myself, and a couple other guys, we're starting a new meeting over at the a meeting Wednesdays at 7 o'clock on the new emotional sobriety book. I don't know how old or how new they are. At the General Service in New York.
Excuse me.
And the emotional sobriety is starting volume one. And it's 7 o'clock every Wednesday at the corner of Bayview and Whaley at the United Church of Christ. Every Wednesday at 7 o'clock.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, could you raise your hands? Newcomers, we welcome you, and we'd like to introduce ourselves to you. So if you are new, first meeting or in the first 30 days of sobriety, would you like to identify yourself so we can welcome you? Yes, ma'am.
My name is Lorraine.
Hi,
Lorraine. Hey, Lorraine, welcome.
That's
fine. You got it.
Welcome.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Yes, sir, in the back.
Hi, I'm James.
Hi, James.
Hey, James.
So welcome. Glad you're here.
Yes, ma'am.
Hey, Vanessa. Welcome. Glad you're here.
Okay. Yes, sir.
I'm Kelvin.
Hey, Kelvin. Welcome.
Welcome.
Glad you're here.
Hi, I'm Shelby.
Hey, Shelby. Welcome. Glad you're here.
Anybody else? Okay, perfect lead in to the sponsorship question. If you are new in Alcoholics Anonymous, you wouldn't take a trip without a guide, and you definitely need a guide in Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's what a sponsor is. We will have, is it you, Evan, and Casey will be up here to answer any questions you might have about Alcoholics Anonymous, about getting a sponsor, using a sponsor, anything like that. So just feel free to come up and speak with them. They'll be up here in the front of the room. We do have literature, it's over there to my right. If you are new, we do have a newcomer's packet. Make sure you pick that up. Let's see. Ask the group to, well, we already thanked the panel, but let's thank the panel.
Thank you.
Thanks to all who participated. After we clean up, everybody's invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the third step. And you're welcome to attend our meeting after the meeting, which is held at
Plaza del Sol.
Plaza del Sol. 21st and Colonial.
22nd.
Thank you. 22nd. I don't know where I am.
It's the only Plaza del Sol in Norfolk.
You know, if you go over the railroad tracks, you've gone too far. Yeah. All right. And Who's volunteered to read the last paragraph on 164 for us tonight? Evan, there you are.
All right, my name's Evan, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Evan.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize that we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you could do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourselves to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Thank you.
Amen. Yes. We'll close with the Lord's Prayer for anybody that wants to join us.
Is it recorded?
Well, I've never seen the basket, but it's up there.
Okay.
I know, right?
Okay, thanks again for everybody that came tonight. And Robert, how about leading us out?
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Amen.
What is key game?
Oh my gosh.